Hey, what's up, guys? It's your host, Lopez, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode today. If you're on Facebook and want to show some support with a like on the page, you can find it by going to facebook.com/behindcloseddoorspodcast or just searching Behind Closed Doors Podcast. You can also find it on Twitter at the BCD Podcast and on Instagram at the Behind Closed Doors Podcast. Last but not least, follow the podcast on Spotify by searching Behind Closed Doors in the podcast section to see all the amazing upcoming interviews I have to come. Every Sunday, I post a picture of a band with a hint of who my next guest is. Then on Tuesday, I post a brief clip from our video interview with a good highlight of our conversation we had. And lastly, post the new episode up on Spotify every Thursday morning. Now, on to the episode.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you officially.
right, man. We got Bobby Crew from Signs of the Swarm on. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great, dude. I'm good. See, you got that drum kit behind you. Is that where you do all those videos you post?
Yeah. So this is my basement. This is like my space. I have my monitors here. And yeah, it's my drum set. Just kind of chills there.
That's nice, man. It's nice.
Yeah.
First and foremost, just want to say thanks for taking time to talk with me today.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I love this. Is especially not being able to go on tour. It's super nice to just get to meet people and catch up with people, especially right, music. Sure. So yeah, I appreciate this a lot. So.
Not a problem, man. Where are you from originally? Where did you like grow up at and all that good stuff?
I'm from here, actually. I live in the same place that I grew up in. I grew up in Wheeling, West Virginia. It's like it's a bigger town for West Virginia, but it's a smaller place, more or less. It's like an hour and a half from Pittsburgh. So yeah, I grew up here and I've traveled a lot. I've done some moving, but I've ended up back here and, this is where my family is and everything. I'm still not too far from the city. So.
And that's where you're living at now?
Yep. Yep.
What all do you guys usually do for fun out that way?
Not much at all. We have some really beautiful state parks in West Virginia. It's a really beautiful state, but I love that shit. But I've lived here my whole life, so it's kind of like, you know, it gets a little redundant.
Right. Now for drums, is that the only thing that you play?
No, I play guitar, bass. So I actually joined the band on guitar because I wanted to play something different. And it just so happened to be that I ended up playing drums after some time. But yeah, I do a lot of writing for the band on guitar and bass, and played in a couple other bands as well, playing guitar. But yeah, mostly drums.
What got you to want to even start with the drums?
Well, when I was a kid, my mom, she was in drumline when she was a kid, and my parents were pretty young. And I remember I was like, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old. And my parents were like, you either have to play sports or join band. And I was like, I don't want to play fucking sports. So, right. And then little did I know that it's just as like demanding as sports, you know, at the end of the day. But yeah.
What kind of influences do you have as far as actually like behind the drum kit? What did you notice you played more to?
Well, when I was like going back to my mother when I was really young, she was like, hey, have you ever heard of this band like Slipknot? I was like, no, what, you know, have you ever heard of this band like Breaking Benjamin, Disturbed? So she really got me into metal, and that really made me want to like pursue playing in bands and playing metal. But I got to play jazz band and other things in school. So honestly, when I'm like bored and I'm watching drum videos, I'm rarely watching metal videos. I really appreciate and enjoy like
different
fusion rock.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the different genres, but mostly metal. I've just always wanted to play metal and tour and, you know, do their thing.
I had Corey Arford on from Carnifex last night, their guitarist, and
I would have never guessed that he started out playing stuff like 311 and stuff like that on guitar.
Really? Wow, yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah, I
remember learning like how to play Aerials by System of a Down on guitar when I was like 8. You know, I was like, just trying to figure that out.
It's crazy, ain't it, though? It can advance, you know, and yeah, that's crazy stuff. What was the first drum kit you've ever had?
The first drum kit I ever had was like $100 first act. Super cheap, came with all those shitty cymbals. I remember like taping a piece of paper to my kick drum to try to make that like clappy, like metal kick drum sound. And then I got like a decent like Pearl export kit as I got older. And then eventually I was able to get my own stuff. But
what's the kit that you play on now that's behind you?
It's actually a Pearl kit as well. This is a Pearl Masters kit. And I've wanted one of these my whole life, pretty much. So I had a cheap Pearl kit when I was a kid. Then I got my first like decent kit. It was like $1,000. It was like a D-drum kit. But I always knew I wanted a Pearl kit again at some point, you know? So this last year, just because we haven't been touring as much, I kind of had the money to get it. So, and I haven't been able to use it, you know, play live. So, but I really like it.
So are you endorsed with Pearl?
No, I'm actually chasing it. I've been chasing it pretty hard. Yeah. I've talked to them a couple times and, you know, we kind of message back and forth on Instagram and stuff, but I haven't got an actual offer yet.
Gotcha.
But I'm hoping. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So with you joining Signs of the Swarm, what was the story like with you joining with those guys?
Oh, so around 2015, I saw they played their first show and I kept seeing videos, people sharing it in like my local scene. And I was like, this band's fucking ridiculous. And then they posted that they needed a guitar player. And I'd been playing drums in other bands and some guitar, but I was like, oh, I want to do something different. So I blew them up, didn't hear anything back for a couple of months, and they posted again. And I was like, what the fuck? And so I kept blowing them up. And eventually they got back to me and they were like, we need a fill in for this show. Come try out. And, yeah, I ended up playing guitar. Our drummer quit at the time, so I went back to drums. I've been just about everywhere in the band.
There's been quite the lineup change in there that I've seen too.
Yeah, every release, the lineup changes at some point. Like myself and Corey have pretty much been in the band. I joined a couple months into the band being, you know, the thing, but Corey has really been like the OG guy holding it together.
Yeah, for sure, man. Now, jumping into your guys' music, the song Cesspool of Ignorance is number one on Spotify via stream, sitting at 2 million. What was what's your opinion that makes that song stick out so strongly?
Well, it's definitely like short and catchy. You know, it has that, I remember I still have the video on my cell phone from when we were in Corey's parents, like in his bedroom at his parents' house, writing the riffs and like the lyrics to that song. So it's very like catchy and cathartic and like fast paced, but also a lot of the reason I think it blew up was because the day it dropped, a bunch of like meme pages, like Deathcore Dad memes, all these meme pages were sharing it. So in like the first day, that video got like 150,000 views for, and we just were totally did not expect that at all. You know, we were like, oh, probably, you know, we didn't think it would do terrible, but we didn't think it would be anything like that. So I think that, and then the nostalgia of it as well, like that album was just kind of ridiculous front to back. Like we wanted to go for that, like just overly heavy, like Infinite Annihilator style, but kind of be able to play it live, you know? So I think people like that a lot about it, I guess.
What's it like when you guys play that song live? Does it make people like run from a distance and like, dude, this is what I've been waiting for all night?
Yeah, I think so. We've kind of, because there's been so many changes over the last couple of years, we've kind of like joked about like, oh, we should do a show or do a tour where we don't play it just to see what people do, you know? Yeah, just to see, because we have so much new music now. But no, at the end of the day, it's definitely like the crowd pleaser. It's usually, if we headline, it's like our encore song and whatnot, but it's kind of the song that like it builds the tension up to that song. I feel like the rest of our set does at this point.
For sure. Yeah.
It's fun. It's definitely fun to play.
What's the writing process, or the creative writing process I should say, for you guys when you guys, you know, make a song from scratch?
It's changed a lot over the years. because there's been so many lineup changes. At the end of the day, I say that a lot, but at the end of the day, the band, we're really just kind of focused on keeping the band going. So whatever that entails, whatever has to happen, everyone's on the same page with that. But it used to be, we've always kind of been like a bedroom recording band. You know, we used to just go to Corey's parents when we were younger, like in our early 20s, and just write. And it was mostly, we'd just start with a guitar riff and then add drums and superior drummer or whatever. We used to practice a ton together and we'd write songs, you know, in a room together. But as we've kind of grown up and moved apart, it's a lot of Skype writing. So what we're doing right now for this album, and the two singles we just released, is pretty much entirely Skype-based writing. So I have a program here, I run Studio One, and just screen share with the guys, and we all pretty much lock into the same tempo, and we'll just jam, we'll bounce ideas back and forth. If somebody comes up with something, they'll send, pretty much export it, like the dry track, send it to me, and then I work it in. So it's a lot of like...
Give me just 1 second real quick.
No, no problem.
Apologize about that, man. My daughter was going nuts right now, so I had to call my wife to come in to take care of her.
No, that's totally fine.
So no, like your guys' creative process, you said you guys sit in his parent, you sit in his parents' house, and is it more of like a group effort?
Well, we used to. So now it's more like, because Corey's moved away. He lives in Indiana now, and we've all kind of have our own thing going on.
We're in Indiana.
I think right in Indianapolis, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just a couple hours up north from Indianapolis. I live like at the top half of Indiana, like right off of Michigan and Illinois.
Oh, okay. I just went to Fort Wayne to visit Sweetwater recently, actually. And that's a hell of a trip.
It's huge, ain't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is.
I pass by there all the time. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We do a lot of Skype writing now here from my kind of home base. So
what's that like? What does that entail? Because I know I talked with David, and he had mentioned that it's all Skype based. So like, how does that work out?
Yeah, so we just all hop on a Skype call, and I have I basically stream and share my screen to the guys, which has our DAW and everything in it. And a lot of the time, just somebody comes with an idea, or I have something I've just kind of jotted down. And then we all kind of lock into a tempo together on our own DAW. Like Jeff and Dave will lock into their own thing, and we'll just kind of work by ideas back and forth. And if we get something we like, they'll export it, send it to me, and then I work it in with what we got going on. So it's the first time we've ever really done anything like this, where everybody's kind of writing at the same time, you know, but also on our own. So it's the album that we've been working on recently is definitely like the most cohesive, I guess would be the word that we've done. It's very everybody has some input, you know. We used to just do, somebody would basically show up with a song to practice, you know, and then we'd be like, okay, we got to work it out. So we had a lot of like, everybody's writing different styles, we just kind of had to work them together,
right?
But this has been like everyone's got input on every song pretty much every step of the way. So I really enjoy this, actually. I never thought I would, but after doing it for like the better half of a year, it's been very easy compared to just kind of sitting together and forcing something, you know?
So like, you guys don't really have much feedback, like as far as like lagging goes or anything like that, or like, you know, crappy audio for...
No, actually, it's been really nice. We pretty much all are running the same DAWs. Well, myself and Jeff, we're both running Studio One, and we both use the same plugins and stuff. So we kind of have the same sounds. We collaborate on that shit all the time. We're all really big gear nerds, you know, so we're always like, oh, I got this patch. Send me that patch. I'll send you this patch. And we just download them, and then we can send each other dry tracks, basically just clean guitar tracks of whatever we're riffing. Send it to me, I can work it in, I'll track bass, add drums, that kind of shit. And then vocals are usually last. We just send everything out to Dave and he starts working on it.
Nice. So yeah, that's cool, that especially with the pandemic, you know, and all that good stuff, being able to do stuff like that. Because if it weren't for this, what do you think your guys' method would be?
Honestly, I'm not sure. So previously when we were writing Vital Deprivation. Sorry.
Oh, you're good, buddy.
We just kind of would write a song on our own. Like, so VD was like, Jacob wrote three songs, Corey wrote three songs, I wrote three songs, Dave wrote a couple songs. And then we just showed up and had to kind of make them all work together. And they were all good songs, but you can kind of get that vibe when you're listening to it, that it's not as like it doesn't kind of sound like we wrote it all together. You know, every, it kind of has like its individual parts of the album that make more sense than like the album as a whole. So this helps with that a lot.
That's, dude, yeah, that's, I know a lot of people, they use Zoom like this, you know, but never really thought about using Skype for that. And that's pretty cool that when he said that, you know, you guys were using Skype. He didn't really go too much in depth with like how it worked or anything. So I figured that'd be a question for you. And that's cool that, that it works out for you guys like that. And
we've tried some different ones. We haven't tried Zoom, but we tried Skype and Discord. And Discord has like a really strong built-in gate that's like good for, you know, talking like we do like this. But so like a lot of the sound that they're hearing when I'm tracking is coming from my mic here. So it cuts a lot of that out. So we found that Skype is just the easiest for that, you know.
Now the music video for that song, what was it like for you filming that?
Which one? I'm sorry. Which
song? For Cesspool of Ignorance.
Oh, okay. I got you. Gotcha. Oh man, that's so long ago. So we actually filmed that at a small, it was an abandoned glass factory and closer to where I live. It was in Wellsburg, West Virginia, I believe. And it was terrible. So there's this, we have this like weird habit of, up until recently, pretty much every music video we've ever filmed has been in the cold, outside, miserable, in the middle of the night. Like, it just seems to always be that way. But I remember it being really fun, honestly. We went up there, we spent a whole day. It was our first had done a music video for Mouth Zone, but it was very like low budget, you know. It was like the first music video we'd ever done. So that was kind of our first dive. And like, we're trying to make a legit professional video. And it was a lot of work, you know. We never realized we were especially DIY still at that point, just how much work goes into like these, you know, the projects outside of just writing music, you know. Like even now, you know, we do a lot of we build our own sets. We build our own effects for the most. We had an effects artist for one of our recent videos, but you know, we do a lot of that stuff ourselves. So it's our music videos in general have always been very interesting and a lot of work.
Yeah, the music video for the most recent single that you guys put out was pretty cool. And you guys had, you know, the two artists that came and did a feature on it as well. And so is that the music video you're talking about that you had the effects artist for?
Actually, no, we did all that ourselves. Well, Pernicious, one we did right before that, we had Kelly Harris. She did the she did all the effects for our friend Dave Rucky. He plays drums in Sentinels. He was like our male actor for that. And we had a full body effects head mask she made from scratch for it and everything. We couldn't have done that on our own, you know, so that's, we cool, had to hire somebody.
Yeah, but that's cool, man.
It's cool though, for the collection, all of the wiring and the blood, all that stuff Dave actually did on his own. So he spent like a week putting together pretty much all of the background stuff for that video.
Where was that shot at?
We filmed that at Preserving Underground. It used to be Preserving Hardcore. It's like it's newer, but it's becoming like a more popular thing. I think that if it wasn't for COVID, it would be blowing up right now. They've had some pretty decent sized bands play there, but up until recently it was just like a corner stage, hole in the wall kind of place. And recently they bought out a big old church and have turned the basement into a massive record store. They have the whole hardcore history, metalcore history museum, OG deathcore. Like, they got some cool shit in there. So if you're ever near Pittsburgh, definitely check that shit out, because it blew my mind going in there. They were kind enough to let us rent it out for hella cheap. And it's upstairs. It's like a full church, whatever the word is for the big room of the church.
But, right.
you know, so we got to use that space. And at first we were worried it wasn't going to work out. But then once we started getting all the lights and everything in there and like building it, it turned out really cool.
Yeah, that music video was fucking killer. I'd never imagined it was an old church that it was filmed in. Mm-hmm. That's cool, man. So out of all the albums that you guys have so far, the most popular is Disfigurement of Existence. What do you think makes that album stick out?
That was like our first, you know, kind of successful, quote unquote, successful, you know, album. And there's a lot of nostalgia with it, just given the time. And obviously the vocals are ridiculous. It's just nonstop, brutal front to back. So I think people resonate with that a lot. And we did a lot of touring on it before things changed with the lineup change and everything. So most of the people who, most of the tours we went on, people we've met, like, you know, we go to city to city and we have all these friends. We meet most of those people, have met most of those people touring on that album. So I think there's a lot of nostalgia with it as well. But personally, I'm really looking forward to what we have coming, because I think it blows it out of the water. Like, we were really trying to stick to like the OG deathcore, like Suicide Silence, Infinite Annihilator, like ridiculous sound, you know. And there's not a lot of people doing that anymore with keeping it original, you know what I mean? So, especially, and for us, that was our last album that was like that ridiculous. We've kind of gone in a more musical, I guess, you know, route over the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure, man. Jumping into your live shows, what in your opinion is Signs of the Swarm show like, if somebody's never seen it before?
Ooh, a lot of energy, very high energy, a lot of blast beats. A lot of blast beats, a lot of, you know, too, is something we never really expected with the kind of music that we play. It seems like there's always a fight. Like every time we play in every city, like there's always a fight, and we never really anticipated that, like when we were, you know, writing this kind of music. Because it's not like we, you know, we're not like a beat down band, you know, but we played, we do a lot of tours with those kind of bands like Traitors and Body Snatchers. So we always end up in these situations where people are beating the shit out of each other, which is cool. It's great. But, yeah.
What, have you guys ever played a show in Indiana before? Because I could have sworn I seen you guys on a bill, like going to like Valparaiso before, or like,
You know, I can't remember, honestly. Probably, we've played in pretty much almost every state in like the continental U.S. So I feel like we had to have. I know we played Peoria. That might be Illinois.
Yeah, that's Illinois.
It's so hard.
I'm gonna look it up now.
In South Bend, maybe, or is that that's Indiana?
Yeah, South Bend is where like Notre Dame is. Yeah, it's not that far from Fort Wayne.
I know we've been through South Bend many times. I'm not sure if we've actually played there. But yeah, I don't know. We've done a lot of touring in the last 4 years or so. It's really when we started touring, like 2016, 2017. And so it's so hard to remember. We crammed so much in like 3 years.
Yeah, I just tried looking it up too, and I couldn't find anything. I'd probably have to just dig deeper into that. But I could have sworn, dude, there was a tour date or a tour lineup that I seen with you guys on it. And God, for the life of me, I can't fucking remember who it was. But anyway, when you're on tour, what's a day like in the life for you?
For me personally, well, I do. Corey and myself do pretty much all the driving, just because it's safer for us that way. Because like half the other dudes in our band are blind, so like driving at night's like, you know, terrifying. So we do a lot of driving. So most of the time, we wake up, we always try to stop at Planet Fitness or Love's, like any other band pretty much, and get a shower if we have time. We always do like our little morning rituals. We're outside of the van, brushing our teeth, bullshitting, smoke a joint, you know, whatever, get our shit together. And then we get to the show. We always try to be the first band at the show, like just because it's a good look for promoters and, you know, and other things. So not to like downplay any, you know, to make anybody else look bad, just to, we try to be very prepared people, like as a band in general. That's something that when we first started touring, we slacked on super hard. We'd show up an hour late, 2 hours late. So in the last couple of years, we've been like hard on, you know, on that. So we get there hella early, and then we can usually just chill. My favorite part of touring is the traveling, getting to see cities and different places. Like the music's only, you know, a certain percent of your day. So I try to get in as much exploring and stuff as I can. A lot of the times we just park, lock the van, and then just start walking, you know, and just end up wherever we end up until it's time to load in. So And then we do our show, you know, whatever, hang out. We spend a lot of time at the merch table. That's a big thing for us. We always try to hang out at the merch table. And then the end of the night, we just smoke some more and then hit the road. That's pretty much it. We're super simple people. We don't do too much. We don't party, you know, we have a couple drinks, have a couple smokes, and then we just fucking get going.
Now, when you said you guys take shower of loves and all that, I used to be an over-the-road truck driver, so you'll know what I'm talking about. That ding that goes off when you get out of the shower room.
Yeah.
That bell that goes off. I can just hear it clear in my head right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's crazy. So you've seen some shit then. You know how it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Over the road, yeah, I see a whole lot of, you know, like you said, just it's nice to be able to see that scenery. You know, like if you're going through, like, Wichita, Kansas, you know, you see some stuff in Colorado, or you see some stuff in Joplin, Missouri, you know, some mountainside stuff, and it's just totally different. The atmospheres are completely different when it goes from state to state for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing I miss most about touring right now, is just like the waking up, you're going down the road and there's just like, you see the mountain ridge, you know,
yeah, dude.
Like that. And it's just like, oh man, it's so far away, but it's so close.
And then the temperature changes, like for us, cause you're, you know, it's, what's the temperature where you're at now?
We're probably in the same climate. I mean, I'm only probably 4 or 5 hours from you, honestly. So it's cold as shit right now.
It's 28 degrees out here today, which is not that bad for this morning. Yeah,
I think it's like 20 right now. It's been pretty, we're just coming out of all this crazy snow, you know.
We've got
like a couple feet of snow over the last couple of weeks. It's ridiculous. So
it sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's actually been kind of nice because I'm trying to wrap up writing this album, so there's a couple of days I haven't been able to go to work, so I've just been
taking stuck advantage here. Of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what's the craziest thing, or you know, the craziest thing that you've seen or experienced on tour? David had told me that time about the that dude trying to grab his arm and trying to force him to try and take some heroin.
Oh my God. Yes. I think that was in Europe somewhere. The guy's like, hey, and just like grabbed his wrist and like he hit him in the arm, and Dave thought that he was like stabbing him with something. But no, I think for me, the craziest, there's a couple things, I guess. The craziest as in like the worst thing I ever experienced was we were in Texas, and there was this older, I'm not going to say her name, but she's very famous in like the Dallas area. People, anybody listening will probably know. She's this older lady, and she was like literally like violently trying to fuck everybody. She was like jumping in people's vans. Like I was trying to sleep in our van at the end of the day. She's like climbing in our back seat, reaching over us and shit. Like her husband comes out, or her boyfriend or whatever. And it's like, everybody, y'all got to fuck my wife. It's just so terrible, man. Just one of those things. I'm like, why is this happening? I'm trying to leave, you know. We've seen a lot of accidents, unfortunately, you know, going down the highway. Like you said, you did a lot of driving. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
Driving. You just see terrible things. The craziest, as in like coolest thing I've ever experienced, is last year we were in Tokyo and we got invited to go to this club, and we were like, okay, you know, somebody's inviting us to a club, of course, we'll go, that's cool. And we show up and it's like full on movie VIP club. They have us in like sectioned off, like roped off sections with guests, and like all these all this like free liquor, they're just bringing us liquor, buying us cigarettes, just like just ignorant shit. I was like, I would never expect. The fucking the ex prime minister of Sweden was there. Somebody who the son of the owner of Funimation was there. Just all this crazy shit, you know. We were just like, oh, like we just showed up in our like dirty tour clothes, you know. We've been on flying for like 5 days and we're just sitting there like, what the fuck is going on? And everybody was so nice and kind, and we were just like, okay. And then we went, you know, and then we left, and it was just like, what the fuck just happened? You know, right. You know, they were taking pictures, we were taking pictures with them, and like they had people pictures on the wall, like them with Post Malone and all this crazy shit, and we're like, we just are like just some random ass, you know, dirty kids pretty much. Right. From fucking Pittsburgh. So that was crazy for sure.
Did you guys feel out of your element?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're like, you know, there's people with, like, it's a club, people are dancing, and we're just like sitting here getting drunk like, yeah, hey, what's up, you know. Like it was something completely different for me, especially because most of the guys are from Pittsburgh. I'm from small town West Virginia. Like I travel to Pittsburgh, you know, so even especially for me, I'd never seen anything like that.
I had a buddy when I went in CDL training. He was, I want to say it was West Virginia. I'm looking real quick because he was from a town. Damn it, of course, it's not going to say where he's from. Newport News, Virginia. Oh, it's Virginia. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, he was from a different part. So,
yeah, West Virginia is beautiful, but there's not a whole lot going on here. That's for sure.
What, for when you were on tours and you said you seen accidents, like, did you just see like people spin off or like hit guardrails and stuff like that? Because like the worst thing that I seen as far as being overload truck driver was, it was a fresh, like a semi rollover or whatever. And it was like not the typical, you know, just like, oh, it rolled over and the guy got out and he's like, you know, got to call his company. It was, they blocked off a good 3 mile stretch from start to finish on that actual rollover. And, in between it where the rollover was, there's the dude just laying there on the ground and the cops are over there and they have the blanket covering over his dead body and you can see his feet and shit, you know, just laying there. And like, dude, it was gnarly, crazy.
Most of the time, we haven't seen a ton of that. There was one time where we were actually on tour with Ingested and Body Snatcher, and we were like maybe a mile behind Body Snatcher driving through the night. It was super late. And we were on our way to this next show. I don't remember where we were exactly, but we saw, like, we got a message that was from Kyle. That, you know, he's like, I just saw, like, we just saw this guy. Like, they had just drove by. I don't even know if the cops were there when they drove by, but by the time we drove by, the cops were there. But, you know, this guy had gotten an accident in a four-way, and it basically his body was just, you know, everywhere. So by the time we got there, they did have tarps down and everything, and you know, but you could still see it was a mess. It was terrible. I mean, we've seen some shit for sure, but that was about the worst that I can remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff to see, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You think that the road, there's so much more, just, and that's why like we drive, you know what I mean? There's so much you have to think about outside of just like playing a show and stuff, you know, traveling and being in a band. And it's nuts. It's a lot of pressure.
yeah. Now, what's a dream lineup for you that you guys would want to be a part of?
See, if Job for Cowboy ever makes that comeback, that's like my absolute top tier, you know, goal. Our first like major local show we ever opened for on a tour was like, we opened for The Artist Murder and Fit for an Autopsy in 2016 or early 2017 or something, and so that would also be one of my major things, was Fit for an Autopsy. We actually got like a kind of under the table offer for a Fit for an Autopsy tour before all this COVID stuff went down, and then ever since we just never heard anything about it because nobody knows what's going on. But yeah, that I would say probably Job for Cowboy, The Artist Murder, somewhere in that. Either one headlining, Fit for an Autopsy and us would be my absolute, I think, dream lineup. Also, the Acacia Strain. I've always wanted to tour with the Acacia Strain just because I think that would be a good fit for us.
Yeah, dude. Oh, yeah. What about you guys with like something like Angel Maker or like, you know, like you said, Infant Annihilator, you know?
Yeah. Well, Angel Maker, we have talked with them about doing tours often. It's just it never really has worked out yet. We've done a lot of tours. What's one thing is we've been super lucky to do a lot of tours with a lot of our friends, you know, so like Brand of Sacrifice, All Homies, like we've did Falsifier many times, Face Your Maker a couple times, so that's awesome. And we've tried to, Angel Maker is like supposed to be a part of multiple of those tours and it's just never worked out. But yeah, I would love to do a tour with Angel Maker. Just in the last year, I've become really good friends with Jesse, their drummer. And we're always nerding out on Instagram over drum shit together. And Carcosa, that's like Andrew Baena's new band. Their drummer Travis, I've been good friends with him for a little while and he's really nice. I'd love to do a tour with them as well.
Are you guys, who are you guys currently signed with?
We're with Unique Leader Records. This is the album we're working on right now is our last contractual album with them. So we're always talking about other, you know, opportunities and stuff, but they have been really good to us over the years. So we'll see how that pans out. But yeah, right now we're with Uniquely Records.
And if you guys decide to go forth with another label, do you guys have any leads as to who it might be?
We've talked to some people, but nothing is like at all solidified. You know, we're always looking for options, you know, everywhere. Cause you know, at the end of the day, it's just about the name, you know, whatever we can do for the name of the band. So, when we've talked about, we released Sense Disorder independently, and to this day, it is still one of our best paying ventures, just because it was all self-funded and we did it all ourselves. So we're always talking about how we can exploit that, you know, to use that to our advantage. But nothing really solidified. I really like Unique Leader, and I don't necessarily see us going anywhere else, but we are coming off of our contract with them, which is kind of cool to just, for the first time, have the opportunity to look, you know. I mean, they really helped us build what we've done, especially Eric was the guy who picked us up when we were very close with him. He passed away a couple of years ago. So since then we've kind of been like, oh, you know, like it's been a bummer, you know, we miss him. And he was a really great guy. He was really like, he was like the person who was really always in our corner at the label. So
what's a conflict or failure that you faced while being a musician?
I have tried out for a lot of bands. I've sent a lot of like submissions in for like filling in for tours for other bands. You know, I've been turned down a couple times. I had the opportunity to try out to do some tours with Abigail Williams. I tried out for that and then, you know, it didn't pan out. Also, we've had tour opportunities that we've missed out on for one reason or another, you know, with member changes and stuff. So, but conflicts, nothing terrible really. I mean, the bands, you know, we spend a lot of time together. We have some internal conflicts here and there, but aside from what's already out there to the world, nothing major, you know. I've played in a lot of bands, like local bands leading up to being in Signs. And I mean, I've played shows where literally people just, no one's showed up, you know, like, especially where I'm from, it's mostly bar venues and whatnot. So that's been a big, I'd say most failures were in that realm where I'd be in other bands. We'd go to play shows and nobody would show up.
Did you expect Signs of the Swarm to be how it is now? Or what was your intentions when you first joined with them?
The reason I wanted to join the band is because when I first heard the band, like saw their live videos from like their, so they had played their first show ever in January of 2015. And they'd only been a band for like officially a band a couple months before that. Corey and CJ were writing for years because they went to school together. So they were like friends growing up and they were always like writing music, but the band really formed in like 2014, 2015. And as soon as I saw their practice videos and their live videos, I was like, this is sick. I haven't heard a band like this from Pittsburgh. It's like, I want to be a part of this, you know, because I always knew that there was something special about just like, just the sound of the band. You know, I didn't know what particularly, but just compared to all the other bands I was in, all the other bands in the area, it just, Signs kind of had it, you know? So I always was hopeful. And there's been a lot of up and downs in the last six, seven years, but you know. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's always been for the better. You know, we're definitely working the best together now. But I never really expected it to get mostly like you were talking about with Cesspool earlier and Disfigurement. I didn't expect that album to do as well as it did. I thought that it would kind of be this gradual, you know. Maybe where we are now, we'd start kind of growing more. But I mean, right after, you know, that album came out and about less than a year later, it was only like 4 months later that CJ decided to leave. And when we picked up Dave, and from there on, we just started growing exponentially, you know, because we started touring a lot more. Getting Dave really opened us up to being able to tour a lot more. Because he was very interested in touring as like I was and the rest of the guys. So the touring helped a lot. as soon as we started hitting the road, we got a couple tour offers like with Ingestin. Then we got some bigger like festival tours, opening for like Devastation on the Nation and Bloodletting tour. That really like our, just like our Facebook following or Instagram following or views and stuff, in the last 2-3 years has multiplied by like 6 times compared to like when Disfigurement dropped. So it's interesting that that album is our best, most played album, but it's been like all the tour cycles after that album have been like what have grown us as a band, you know, like palpably, you know, with like money and likes and whatnot. So
what was your input and like what did you notice as a feedback as far as when CJ was, you know, going through whatever the case was with that situation, and then once David joined in, like what was the reaction that you guys seen from fans when everything was going down?
Well, so that whole switch was very interesting, just because things were kind of coming to a build. We kind of expected something was going to change, but we didn't know exactly. And basically I got a call that was like from CJ that was like, hey, I got an opportunity. I can't pass it up. I'm going to take it. And I was like, understand, completely understand. Do you think? Totally cool. So, but that was like 2 weeks before we were supposed to leave for a tour with Ingestin, oh, no. Which was our first full US tour. Like 30, it was like 80 days with like all the tour, like 2 tours combined. So we had to find somebody quickly, you know. So we found Dave within a couple of days, and he was like, we didn't know if we were going to stick with him at the time. We're basically like, we need somebody to fill in. He's like, I'll do it. And it just worked out. After halfway through the tour, we started talking about just keeping him because he was killing it. And he was like, yeah, I'd love to stay. And it, you know, worked out. But so the first couple shows were super weird because we didn't say anything about it. So Dave, you know, we showed up to like the first show. People were walking up to Dave, talking to him like he's CJ, because they just see him as like, you know, the front man of the band. Yeah. And if you've never met him before, he's a tall guy that has tattoos, like, you know. So, and then we went on stage and there were people, I mean, it was a good show, but there were people that were like, where, you know, like, what's going on, like, where's CJ? Because we just, no one knew at the time. We didn't want to say anything until we had all the details sorted out, so we basically just had to zip our mouths and just go, you know.
Yeah,
go for it.
Absolutely.
So when videos started coming out, like people posting videos like Signs of the Swarm live with, you know, this dude, the Dave from Providence or whoever, with different vocalists, they started sharing that around. We're going on tour. We'd show up to tour dates and people would walk up to us that have seen videos and be like, who's this guy? Where's CJ? What's going on? You know? So at first it was really scary. Not that we thought it wasn't going to go well, just we just didn't know how people were going to react. And, you know, that's a big hit. But after everything settled down and we started writing together and we announced Dave officially, it opened up a lot of opportunities for us. I still, on my personal pages, get comments. It's been 3 years now, you know, but people still comment, be like, wait, where's CJ? Or wait, where's Jimmy? You know? And I'm just like, you know, this is a 3-year-old story. I'm like, go find this post or go watch this YouTube video, you know, whatever. It's just kind of gotten to the point where I now, especially with our new music, is kind of more broad genre wise we're opening ourselves up to new people who didn't know the band before, you know. So it's less explaining to do now because people just know us as, you know, this group of people, which is nice. But there was a time where it was like, I mean, for basically a year after the change, that it was just every day our DMs were getting blown up. We're getting tagged, you know, and then especially once he, you know, Lorna Shore announced that they were working with them, we were getting tagged in Lorna Shore stuff. There was so much confusion with all the vocalist changes where we were getting tagged in Chelsea Grin stuff. But at the end of it, it ended up helping us because getting lumped in with those bigger bands, you know, our name, it helped, you know. People who'd never heard of us were like, oh, who's this band? Who's Dave? Who's this? So, you know, it was super scary for the first year, but now that we've kind of gotten into like our groove of who we are now, it's for the better, you know. So
now, talking about new music, what can you say anything about that?
So actually, as soon as we get off this call today, we will be doing a Skype session, and today will be our last writing day for the next album, which is really exciting because all of us especially, but me particularly, I've spent an absolute absurd amount of time. I have a full-time job, and then I also do this writing for the band, which is another part-time job. We do Skype sessions 2 or 3 times a week that are anywhere from 4 to 8 to 12 to 15 hour Skype sessions of writing, you know. So for me, it's super exciting because we're going to mostly wrap up writing today. And then next week we are getting together. We're going to have a big group writing session for about 5 days, and we're just going to comb over all the little details. And then in the next month or two, we should have everything tracked. So we're looking for sometime in mid to late 2021 for the next album.
And then singles, you think you guys will be posting some singles along the way?
Yeah, of course. So the two singles we've released in the last couple months, Pernicious and The Collection, are standalone singles. So they're not on the album, or at least not on the release of the album. So we just wanted to use these to kind of, especially during the pandemic, to have something to put out there. And also they're definitely different vibes from what we've done in the past. So we wanted to use this to kind of open us up to more people, especially the features. It was really awesome having Matt and Nick work on that song with us. We actually wrote that with them. Like, we didn't just present them lyrics. We hit them up and we were like, hey, we want your collaboration. Like, what would you want to do here? You know, so that was really cool. And then they were willing to come out. So having those features is opening us up to like OG Deathcore kids that are in Molotov Solution. Well, people, not kids now, because I'm old, you know? But and then, you know, the metalcore, hardcore Kublai Khan fans are getting into it. So that's really cool. So that's kind of the hope for me, is that these singles open us up to more people for this album. And yeah, we'll have at least 2 singles from the album, I'm sure, if not more.
Now, if you were to sell hot chocolate in a hot state like Arizona or Texas or Florida, how would you do it?
If I were to sell hot chocolate? That's a good question. I've heard like Mexico has that like hot ass cocoa fucking, have you heard of that?
It's like, yeah. It's like,
Actual hot chocolate. See, yeah. I would go that route because I want to try that shit. So
yeah, I'm half Hispanic, and like anything that my dad brings me back when he goes to Mexico is like fucking phenomenal. Like real, he brought me back some real authentic Mexican caramel, and oh my God.
That dude, is so cool. See, my great grandfather on my father's side was 100% Hispanic, and then my great-grandmother was 100% Native American. So they, you know, they had a bunch of Hispanic Native children, and my father. So as a kid, I was exposed to a lot of that, like, just different culture type
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
But that's one thing I've always wanted to try. But so that is probably the most interesting question I've ever got. I was like, what the fuck?
Threw you off.
Yeah, I'm like, wait, what? But that's a good point. I never thought about that. I wonder if those people have ever had hot chocolate.
Like, it's either that, it's either selling hot chocolate in state like Texas or selling slushies in Antarctica.
Well, see, right now though, I bet the people in Texas would be keen on some fucking hot chocolate.
Yeah, that's
yeah, that's, we should be something. Sending. That's what. Yeah, you get fucking Ted Cruz out there passing out hot chocolate packets. It's fucking.
What's up? I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's a bunch of people going around saying that they're going to be buying a bunch of Happy Meals from McDonald's because of the Pokemon cards that are.
Seen that actually. So this girl and this guy I work with have been buying them, like their nieces and nephews. And so they just keep bringing all the Pokemon cards to work, and we're like, so we'll get, like, they'll bring them in, and we're looking through them trying to find like the shinies to see if we can make some money. So it's actually been really cool. So I've been kind of involved in that as well,
dude. It's crazy that the ones like the original OG ones from like when they first came out, like, you know, within the Red and Blue Saga series, and like if you got like a hologram first edition Charizard. Dude, that thing is like fucking stupid expensive. I seen like on Pawn Stars, like they were selling for like, I want to say it was like $75,000 or something like that, dude, for a fucking card.
I have a good friend here in Pittsburgh, that he runs a card shop that, you know, they hold tournaments of all kinds, Magic the Gathering, all kinds of shit. and he professionally trades, you know, that like he does that to keep his business afloat actually sometimes. And it is really unreal. He'll just be like post up a thing and be like, trade it up for this $225,000 collection, yeah, you know? And it's like, and you know, it's not like he's even rich. It's just, he's just investing into the next, you know, yeah, the next bump of it or whatever, the next level. And that shit always blows my mind. That's some like patience.
Dude, there's like those cards, like, I don't know what baseball player it is, but it's like an old original baseball player. Like if you have one of his cards, the original ones, that's in like immaculate condition, which there's only like, I think two or three out in the world. And if you have, that's like almost $2 million for this fucking card. And it's just like, what sentimental value do you have when you're going to post it and frame it up on your wall? Like you're just gonna, like, what is it going
to
do for you?
Millions of dollars. I mean, at that point, it's like, you kind of have to just have the money to just do it. I'd imagine, you know, you're like, yeah, I'll just buy it. You know, like, right. Yeah, I guess like Lil Uzi getting the fucking, Infinity Stone carved in his forehead. It's like, yeah, dude, I have the money. You might as well.
That's what I'm saying. Well, like, what's the like with anything? I guess like with anything like that much high in value, like that's not gonna like, you know, like if it's not a car or if it's not like a house, something like that. It's like a jacket that's been worn in a movie. It's like, what's like? I guess I could see some people that are collectors, but like for me personally, I would never buy like a fucking $100,000 jacket just because it was worn in fucking Ace Ventura or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I imagine like at that point you have to, it's like, well, I have to find a hobby. So this is it, you know, this is my hobby, I guess. So I'd spend all my money on drums probably. Yeah, I do spend all my money on drums.
Do you follow SJC on Instagram by chance?
Yeah.
Did you see that Slimer kit they put out recently?
Yeah.
Dude, yes, that I did. Thing is so fucking cool. I see
that's
that
one thing I miss about like touring is seeing all the different cool drum kits. I mean, especially like Warped Tour days where everybody had a custom SJC kit with like, I remember seeing a Day to Remember once when I was younger, and like his drum set was literally like made of acorns. It was like his top was shaped like this, their drummer's name is Shellnut or whatever. So that's so cool. I always wanted one. Before I got this kit, I was looking into getting a custom SJC kit, but I found this one that it was basically everything I wanted, just a different color for half the price, you know? And like, you know, and I love Pearl drums. So I was like, yeah, that's the one, I guess. But
or it's like Ray from Korn's drum set, like how his cymbal stands kind of like intertwine like tree branches, dude. That is fucking cool. I love that. I love his kit.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think is very cool about drums as opposed to the guitar. I mean, obviously you customize guitars, you can get cool guitars, but there's only like a certain level that you can do it to where it's still practical to hold.
Exactly.
With drums, you can just take metal pieces and do whatever the fuck you want with them, you know? So
it's just like what's his name, Danny Carey from Tool. I know he's got a drum kit that's melted down old cymbals that he had, and that's one of his kits, and like, dude, that's fucking cool.
That company actually has been blowing up lately because they're doing like custom snare drums for the public now. And I've been trying to get my hands on one for a minute, but the custom, they start at like $3,000. That's like base price, you know? So it's
better sound nice.
Oh, they do. It's unreal. That's definitely like a dream piece for me. It's called VK drums. They're awesome.
I'm going to have to check them out.
Yeah. Just look them up on Instagram and just scroll through the pictures. Unreal. It's like just drum porn for days.
Now when you aren't touring and playing music or anything like that, what's some of the hobbies that you're into?
I play video games. I have a wonderful girlfriend. We've been together for a very long time, and especially with COVID and me not being able to tour as much, the last 6 years or so I've spent, you know, 3 to 6 months a year away from home. So
lately
it's been really nice to just do anything, you know, just go to the park or we travel to state parks in West Virginia and all around anywhere we can drive to. But I play a lot of video games.
What kind of games do you play?
So in my adult life, ironically, I've got really into Minecraft just because it's super nice to play with friends. You know, we have a server with dudes from other bands, you know, from all around. But I play a lot of Gears of War. Honestly, if I wasn't so dedicated, like dedicating my time to music, I would try to be playing Gears of War professionally, because yeah, like that is just like, yeah. And there's a actually in Pittsburgh, there's a team, there's like a Gears of War team that that they play, like, you know, nationally, internationally. And just ever since I was a kid, when I got my first Xbox 3, like that's just been like my game. I'm super, it seems like it's so silly to say it out loud, but like I'm just so dedicated to that game. Like I feel like almost every day I have to get like an hour into just fucking, you know.
Oh, no, dude, yeah, that's how I feel with like Far Cry. Like I haven't really played that much, but like I know they have a new one coming out this year, and like I've thought about, you know, the more recent couple of past weeks, I'm like, you know, I've got a couple of them that are just sitting on my Xbox One right now, and you know, I beat them a couple times, but what's it gonna hurt if I restart the, you know, restart it at the highest difficulty level and really see if I'm that fucking badass?
Yeah,
it, you know?
Yeah. I've always been into RPGs. Like I'm super into the Zelda Breath of the Wild lately.
Dude, I never played that, but I was gonna ask. Like, did you play any of the original games, like through Zelda, like Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, that stuff?
Yeah. I had a 64 when I was a kid. I had all the Super Nintendo. I still have Super Nintendo and all that shit.
What'd you think of those games?
Good. So when I was a kid, I had to have my dad like help me with the water level, you know, like I was
not good.
I was not good at those games as a kid. So that's
when I kind of
started playing.
We actually talked about that last night with Corey. He's like, really? He said that's his favorite temple. And I said, well, you know, are you talking about the Young Link when you're in the stomach of Jabu Jabu and you get that sapphire? Or are you talking about the fucking pain in the ass fucking water level where you gotta, you know, raise it lower? It's like,
yeah,
that one, because all you do is you immediately jump to the bottom and you move that one block and that's how you get out. And if you don't, you fuck up and you go through all this stuff just to find out that you have to go back and start all over again by moving that block. And I'm like,
yeah,
dude, my 13-year-old, 12-year-old self, when I did that, I'm just like, dude, fuck this game, you know?
I remember not playing it for like years and then like finally picking it back up again. My favorite type of games, like the old school hack and slash, like Ninja Gaiden. I still replay the original Ninja Gaiden Sigma, Ninja Gaiden Black, like once or twice a year, just straight, because it only takes a couple days, you know. That Resident Evil, all the Resident Evil games. I know life.
What's your favorite Resident Evil?
Probably 4.
Yeah,
just
same here.
Because
it's
it is, and there's just something, so much nostalgia of like I would get off the school bus with my friends, just go sit at their house, and we would just like take turns passing the controller playing Resident Evil 4. And then 5 came out and you could play together, you know, and we were like, what? And like the story on 5 isn't that good, but the gameplay and the guns are incredible.
Yeah.
So I still play that on my Switch a lot as well. So
yeah, there's definitely a different, you know, there's a huge storyline with 4. You know, you start out in that village and then you end up in like a fucking kingdom, and like these people are worshiping this dude, and like, I mean, for fuck's sake, one of the things you got to run from is that big ass statue that's like, you know, you're running on that bridge and you're running from that statue, and it's just like, who would have thought you're going to be a cop walking in the woods at this fucking broke down village and you're going to be doing that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially when, I mean, that game came out when I was like probably 12, and maybe, you know what I mean, so 10, 12, so for me that was like a whole new world of games. And it was like one of the first R-rated like shooting games I'd ever played. I was like, what the fuck? And I would get off the bus with my buddies from school, and I just like watch them play through like Resident Evil 2 in like 3 hours, beat the game. Like we'd get off the bus every day and just like beat Resident Evil 2 for fun, you know? Right. And then so a 4 came out and I was like, holy shit, you know, it's just like a whole new world. So ever since then I've been a huge game nerd. I mean, I used to just Rock Band, Guitar Hero, that was like a big start for me for music too. So I have a big appreciation. I mean, you know how it is. Almost every metalhead likes video games. You know, metal and video games go together like fucking.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing to pass the time on the road for sure. Like,
like
when the original like Pokemon games first came out, you know, like Red and Blue and then Yellow version, and then they had Crystal and, you know, all that good stuff. And then when Ruby and Sapphire came out and it was the first 3D version.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like it wasn't the old bit game style. I'm just like, dude, this is a game changer. Like that's when really things started to really open up. And then now they got 3D versions and you can play it on the Switch. And it's just like so crazy how much it's changed in the years.
Yeah. I went from like, when I was a kid, I played I have a terrible Pokemon story. I played like, you know, hundreds of hours of like Ruby, Emerald, and Sapphire, and I had like every Pokemon from Emerald, and like, you know, like the whole. And then when I think Pokemon XD came out on the GameCube, it was the first time they were in like actual 3D, you know.
Oh, like, yeah, XD, like Darkness.
Yeah. So I had that like custom GameCube and everything. And so I imported all of my Pokemon to that game. And then I accidentally erased the memory card. And I lost like 6 years of my childhood of playing Pokemon with like one press of a button.
No.
So I didn't play again until the new Swords and Shield came out.
Yeah.
So I've been playing that as well lately. But yeah, that's I went like 10 years.
Right?
Yeah. How I went like 10 years without. It's good, but going from, I missed like three generations of new Pokemon.
Yeah.
So going from all the OG shit to that, I'm like, sometimes I have no idea like what type, you know, what Pokemon are.
And they keep on making types and stuff now too. I've noticed like, you know, yeah. Like there's fairy types and there's ice types now and like, God, I guess they're going to be making new ones in the next upcoming one. And they haven't made any more evolutions. And I know a lot of people are bitching about that.
Yeah, the new ones are much more like the game itself is much more like RPG style where you have to like really pay attention to what's going on. And it's cool, but it's just totally different. So that's why I've been more into like Zelda.
And
it's cool. I play a lot of Halo too because they have the Halo remasters now. So my buddies that I've been playing with since I was a kid. I mean, we used to go play on the original Xbox playing Halo 2 team snipers ranked like top 10, you know, in the world, you know, and then we didn't play for so long. And now we play after all these years and we're just getting wrecked by kids, you know, it's defeating, but yeah, that's pretty much what I do in my downtime. It's just drive around, try to check out some shit and play video games.
Can't beat that, man. Well, yeah. Hey, I think, let's see what time I'm here. I thank you so much for talking with me, man. Before we wrap this up, is there anything you want to say to anybody listening?
Yeah. So if you're interested in signs, you're interested in supporting the band, the best way to support us is our Patreon. We do very, very exclusive content on our Patreon every week. All of our videos, music, everything comes out early to our Patreon. We send out stickers, all the stuff. We have super cheap stuff all the way up to more expensive stuff. It's really... But if you're interested in the band and you want to support any music, almost every band has a Patreon now. Any musicians outside of touring, Patreon is a way to do it. Merchandise and all that. So that's pretty much it. We have music coming out very soon. I hope everybody's enjoying the collection and Pernicious. And yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, Bobby. We'll have to do this again, man, and do some game talk for sure.
Hell yeah, for sure.
All right, man. You have a good one.
You too. Take care.
We'll see you.